Thanks, Dave. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. This is the Wednesday edition of our show. We're thrilled that you're listening.
Steve, if you could, just reiterate, you mentioned it's the O.J. Simpson trial anniversary. Is it, what part of the trial? The beginning, the end, which part?
You know, I may have had bad information there. It might have been of the murders, not of the trial.
Oh, is that right?
At the end of the trial. I'll check on that for you.
All right, sorry. That's fine.
I just saw some information that someone interviewed O.J., and he said his life is going well. He served his time. He was in for 9 years for this
but
Vegas
for
thing.
The separate, yeah, for that.
Yeah, I was wrong. It was of the murders, not of the trial.
The anniversary of the murders. And how many years has it been?
25 years.
Wow.
Jeez.
And O.J. said he would not rest until the killer was found, but the killer has not been found, and he is rested. He's rested many times.
He said life is going well for him.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were 25 years ago when that chase was going on?
I do. My wife and I were in Florida at a restaurant. We were watching it on a widescreen television, and the place was so silent. I mean, it couldn't have been more quiet in the room because everybody was sure that it was not going to end well.
But that came much later, too.
That came much later.
Or weeks, a week later or something, yeah.
It was in the evening, correct?
You're interrupting the NBA playoff.
Oh, that's right. I was on the air at The Loop with Tony Fitzpatrick, and Danny Bonaducci was there, and we were broadcasting it as it was going, trying to give updates. There wasn't much to give. It was such a slow speed.
The slowest car chase in the history of car chases.
Yeah.
The Bronco.
Yeah, how many hours did that last? It was a long time.
It seemed like it was all night, but it couldn't have been all night, right? It couldn't have been.
I just remember my kids were young and they wanted to watch something else on TV.
There wasn't anything
else
on TV.
They ran it everywhere.
I know. That's what they were mad about. It was like, I think we ended up having to turn a movie on a different TV or something.
They ran it on every channel.
Yeah. It's funny.
25 years ago, wow.
To the credit of Steve Cochran, he was the only one that I know of that interviewed O.J. Simpson in just like right in the heart of all this. I don't know how he pulled that off, but he did the interview with O.J. Simpson when it was right in the middle of everything. That's pretty good. That's a good get.
Yeah.
Well, remember, there was the Chicago angle, too.
What was that? I can't remember
Simpson
that.
Flew to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I think the day after, the couple days after, and then they were searching out a field out by O'Hare looking for the knife.
Right. So the mere fact, Steve, that they did no further investigation, once he was found not guilty and there was no further investigation, what did that say? Did that say essentially, we know he did it, we know the verdict wasn't the correct verdict, but what can we do at this point?
Right. I mean, the police were convinced he did it. The prosecutors were convinced he did it just because the jury, you know, just because the glove didn't fit.
Right.
You know, why keep looking for someone else when you think you know who did it?
Right.
You have evidence, pretty solid evidence about who did it.
Al Cowling's AC, as we knew him, was driving the white Bronco. The nation watched as the former Bills running back led police on a 75-mile chase on Interstate 405.
Yeah.
CBS News reports an estimated 95 million people across the country watched some or all of the car chase. You couldn't stop watching.
Well, you got the
feeling. He was suicidal. There were reports of that.
And remind me of this, and I'm sorry that I can't remember this, but I honestly can't. Did we know at the time if O.J. Simpson was driving the Bronco or not, or if he was just a passenger? Was that information clear at the point?
I don't remember. I think that was made clear
it
that
was?
AC was driving.
Yeah, because wasn't he on the phone with police? Or
yes.
Part of it, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And he was later found guilty in the civil trial. He was acquitted in the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in the criminal trial. But civil, he was ordered to pay more than $33 million to the victim's family.
And then didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
He didn't really have the money, did he?
No. No.
Or he just refused to pay it?
I can't remember how it broke down, but I know somebody once asked Fred Goldman a question, and Fred Goldman's answer was, that's the last thing I care about at this point. The money isn't the part I care about, which makes perfect sense. You always felt, anytime he showed up on a show, Fred Goldman, you couldn't feel anything but so sorry
for him. Your heart broke watching him.
Horrible. So horrible. Wow. I remember during the chase, and like I said, we were in a restaurant, everyone was watching it on television together, and it was so quiet in there, was the feeling that it's not going to end well, and it can end a bunch of different ways, but no matter which way it ends, it's not going to be pretty. And then it ended.
I don't remember how it ended.
He just pulled back into his house, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And they apprehended him once he pulled back into the house.
And remember the people on the overpasses watching it go by?
Yeah.
Because they, you know, it was televised, so they knew which highway he was on or interstate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because of OJ, we now have the Kardashians.
Your favorite show now.
Yeah.
I already gave up watching it.
You're already done with it one day later.
I decided to replace it with Big Little Lies, which I binged, which is awesome.
That's a better choice.
Skarsgård.
Right.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And I watched John Wick last night, the first one. I'm in love with Keanu Reeves all over again.
It never went away, though, right? You were always in love with Keanu Reeves. Yeah, this isn't a new development.
I know, but it's reignited my love.
Well, that's nice.
God,
that's good
he
news.
Is just the There's... stuff. He wow. really is.
Just the stuff.
Wow. Oh, my God. Have you seen John Wick, either of you?
No.
He is amazing.
I know John Wick's.
No, that's different.
It's a different guy?
That's different.
He's kind of an action hero.
When there's a couple of different questions, but the main one was, what made you decide after all these years to just sit down and watch John Wick?
My son Dylan wanted to see it, and he was kind of surprised he had never seen it. Mm-hmm. So he's like, "Mom, watch this with me." And mm-hmm. I'm like, "Oh, it's 10:30. I got to go to bed." And he just went,
it's Wick time.
Well, he said, Keanu Reeves. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
And now I want to watch all the other ones. Oh, my God. James Bond, who?
What? Really? That good?
John Wick. That's the way to go, people.
We'll take a little break, and then there's more show, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, I have an idea for a new segment. We've done this segment before, but I don't know if we've ever named it, but this would be a pretty good name. Who is the internet mad at? No, not mad at Havana. No, the internet is mad at Dwayne Johnson, or as we lovingly refer to him, The Rock.
Wait, I thought he was the highest paid actor and the sexiest man alive and
he's
the
all
smartest
that and then
person.
Some. He's everything you just
in
said
in an elevator.
Then some. Yes. Everything you just said is true of Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. Aka, The Rock. Why are they mad at The
yes,
Rock?
Why?
Well, how can you be mad at The Rock?
I don't care for him.
He's our greatest paid thespian. They're mad at him because he shared a picture on social media of his 3-year-old daughter, Jasmine, who was taking a swim class. And in this particular swim class, for reasons that are not explained to me in this article, they do not wear bathing suits. So the mere fact that he posted a picture of his child without clothing made people very mad at The Rock.
How old is she?
Three. Who cares?
The Jumanji star shared a... Would you go... If you were describing The Rock, would you go to Jumanji?
Certainly not.
There's
Who
other
wrote
options.
This article?
I don't know. Rachel Schweffelt wrote this article.
Please don't squeeze the Schweffelt.
The Jumanji star...
Who would go there?
Better in other things. Wouldn't you go Skyscraper? That was the greatest movie of last year. The Jumanji star shared a snapshot to
social... See, if I was doing Rock, I'd sue the internet over that.
Right. Shared a snapshot to social media on Monday morning that captured a sweet moment between himself and his 3-year-old daughter, Jasmine, one of the two girls that he shares with Lauren Hashian. The photo shows the little girl without clothes, perched on the side of a swimming pool before jumping off, and her famous father waiting there to catch her. More than 2.9 million people, including celebrity dads...
Need to get a life.
including celebrity dads David Beckham and Josh Brolin... liked the photo on Instagram, and that took place in the first 2 hours that the photo was posted. He got 2.9 million people to like the photograph in 2 hours.
Jeez.
The star, though, deleted it shortly after amid criticism over the fact that his daughter wasn't wearing a bathing suit in the photograph. But not before people had a chance to weigh in, as so often happens on the internet. Why is she naked, wrote one person. I love The Rock, but this pic isn't necessarily for social media. They made bathing suits for a reason, added another. Others insisted that keeping such a photo off the internet is about protecting the child. I would never post a picture of a child naked in a pool on social media. I understand the message that is being conveyed, but there are some messed up people out there, one commentator wrote.
Okay, that commentator, if he doesn't want to post it, then don't. End of discussion.
End of discussion. Why? Here's another. Why would you expose a young child's body to millions of people?
Oh, my God.
Now, I have to say...
Is it going to make a difference if it was a boy?
No, I don't think so. Do you think so?
Yes.
Do you? How come?
Because I think people... Oh, a little girl, she should have this cute little bathing suit on. Babies, I'm sorry, they look cute in just diapers. They right. do!
I know. But at three, you're kind of towing the line a little bit more because... Even though it doesn't appeal to us, there are plenty of very sick people out there, and that's a bonanza to see something like that. It's horrible, but it's true.
Well, if that's the case, then a one-year-old or a two-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
There are sick so people true. Anyway. You can't not do your life because of possible sick people out there.
So what do you do? If you are the... This is hypothetical, of course,
I would put pasties on her.
If you... I don't feel well. I don't feel well. If you're Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock.
From Jumanji.
We know him best from Jumanji. And Jumanji 2.
I didn't know there was a 2.
I think there is a 2. I think so. All right. If you're him and you're hearing this criticism, and obviously his reaction was, well, I better take it down. People are very upset about this. I should take it down. Would you have taken it down?
Nope.
You would have left it up?
Yep. Because really, it's not a big deal.
I don't think it is, but I do think right around the age of three, although...
Come on, there's a difference between 2 and 3.
That's true.
I'd say, 16.
Definitely 16. But I also have to say, and I'm not one for oversharing on the internet anyway.
Right.
But I would know before posting the photograph that there were going to be people who would be upset about it. And why do it if it's going to make people upset?
Because it's your life. And why can't you do what you want? Why do you have to worry about other people being upset? If you're saying something mean or racist or rude,
right.
think about
Which
that.
Which doesn't seem to bother most people anyway.
No, but a naked 3-year-old swimming in a pool.
Right.
It's not like she was at a restaurant.
Here's the other question. Why wouldn't whoever's conducting these swim classes, just for the sake of decency, throw some swimsuits on the kids? That's not a big deal, is it?
Because really what...
A bunch of 3-year-old kids, don't you think just throwing a swimsuit on them isn't the worst thing in the world?
So I'm sorry, there were other kids in the lesson without suits on too?
Not in this particular photograph. It's just his daughter and him waiting there to catch her. But evidently, it's a swimsuit optional class for some reason. But I can't tell you how many times at the beach, not so much here in the Midwest, but on the West Coast, I see this quite a bit. There's naked kids running around the beach.
I don't see it.
You've never seen it?
I really don't. Because it's, I got to tell you, I was pretty excited to buy Michael his first swimsuit when he was 1 year old.
Your son from Jumanji?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I put Michael on the bed in his cute little trunks to take a picture, and I didn't realize that they really weren't like a diaper, so my bed was wet.
Oh.
But I got a great picture.
Oh, well.
But that's, to me, very fun to put a little swimsuit on a baby.
Right.
So I would do that, but I don't see what the big deal is.
Right.
Although, why is it the whole class was naked?
It doesn't say the whole class was naked. But you would just think as part of the swim class, somebody would say, oh, by the way, let's throw some suits on for the class. The biggest adjustment for me was a lot of times, like where we go in Maine, you get a lot of people, tourists from Canada who come down. And I don't know if they don't sell swimsuits in Canada, but a lot of the Canadians swim in their underwear.
They're hockey players. They go from the ice to the pool.
Straight from the ice to the pool. The first time I saw it, I thought, well, this isn't going to happen often.
Like
I just
tidy whiteys?
Whatever underwear they had on, they just take their clothes off and then they just swim in their underwear. It's like I can't explain it.
In the 70s, there was a crisis with laundry detergent in Canada where they weren't able to get it for weeks at a time.
But in the 70s, Steve.
Right. But so that started this practice of swimming in your underwear.
Oh.
Okay, I don't know when to believe you guys and when not. I really don't, because I fall for everything. But are you sure it wasn't?
And then when they could get it, it was powdered, which made it even more difficult.
Oh, you don't want the powder.
No.
A lot of bathing suits look like boxers.
This is underwear. This is flat out underwear. Like, all right. So I saw it the first time and I went, well, you're not going to see this every day. It's just people who just took their clothes off and went swimming in their underwear. But then by like the 38th or 39th time I saw it, I went, oh, there's something going on in Canada. They just don't have swimsuits. They just wear their underwear as swimsuits.
See, I wouldn't think that would be comfortable because it would take a while to dry.
Right. Right.
Would you rather see them in a speedo or naked?
It depends on that particular swimmer.
Really?
I go on a swimmer by swimmer basis.
Ah.
Yes.
Interesting.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news. Jimmy Crane is going to stop by. Comedian actor Jimmy Crane. He's got a one-man show coming up. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dave, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Jimmy Crane, comedian, author, improviser, blogger, teacher, host of the Improv Nerd podcast over on Starburn Audio. Jimmy has a new one-man show, World's Greatest Dad? You're not supposed to say but...
Well, I appreciate that.
I threw that in extra for you. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm doing great.
Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you, and it's nice to meet you, Wendy.
It's nice to meet you. Bill could have sworn that you came up here when Bill and I were back together, but I have never met you. It's nice to meet you. How far do you guys go back?
25 years?
Really?
30 years?
Yeah, we would audition for voiceovers, and I never got anything. Did you?
I got one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, you guys are both really funny. I wouldn't go like top of the heap voices. Yours,
Wendy.
Cracks a lot.
Oh, that's hurtful.
Yeah, mine's just weird.
That's hurtful.
So,
a lot of times we would lose jobs to James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
It would be down to Jimmy, me, and James Earl Jones.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
And then we would get the same thing. We're going in a different direction.
Yeah, they said that a lot. But you could have said, this is CNN. That would have sounded just as great.
Right. This is CNN.
Doesn't that sound great?
That was pretty good.
That was excellent. That was excellent.
Because remember another guy, Byrne Piven?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
The father of Jeremy Piven.
Yes.
And he would say, cold steel on ice.
Oh, that was that guy?
It would melt.
Yes,
yeah.
Or his fame, Uncle Ben's imported rice.
Yes. Yeah. Imported rice, now with the tariffs, he can't have anymore.
No, but he grew up in Evanston, but he talked like this.
Right.
You know?
Right. We did, there was an episode, they did a show in town called The Untouchables for a couple of years, and I was on an episode with him, and he was one of the actors in the scenes with me, and he kept yelling, cut, and the director had to explain to him, oh, that doesn't happen that way. It's the director who yells cut. The actors, and you go, I know, but I thought the scene could have been better. You go, don't yell cut.
Right. You really ingratiate yourself to a crew when you do that.
Right. He did. He absolutely did. All right. Let's talk about the show.
Okay,
a one-man show.
Yeah.
What a perfect time to
do a show.
One-man show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, God.
A show about fathers at Father's Day. That's perfect.
Yeah. So the show is about my story. In 1 year, I lost my dad, who was 80, and he had been sick. And then at 52, I become a first-time father.
Mm.
So I had a very busy
year. And he never got to meet...
Never got to meet...
His granddaughter.
No.
A situation Wendy is all too aware of.
My dad died when I was 10. My mom died a month after our wedding, and I never got to see the grandkids. But they're seeing them now, if that's what you believe. I believe that.
I do, too. Yeah.
And they help give us patience, because, you know, having a kid is not the easiest thing on earth. It's very rewarding, so they say.
Yeah.
it's that's a lot of work.
I wish Wendy was here, because remember, I feel bad when I'd come, I did the show, I was promoting something, and I came to do the show, and I had just had Betsy, and she was just like fresh out of the package. It was maybe a couple weeks, and I remember being totally freaked out, you know, of having a kid, and nobody tells you how hard it is, you know, having a kid.
Right, and there's so many books about raising a child, but every baby is so different. That you just have to day by day figure it out. There's no other way around it.
And I think I drove my poor wife Lauren nuts because Betsy didn't sleep, you know. And you just, I mean, after like a couple of weeks, you just want to put your kid on Craigslist.
Right.
And and we were trying to sleep training.
Yeah.
And
it's
just like, it didn't work, you know. And all the books swear about it. It should be so easy. And
you put one of the most honest things I've ever seen on Facebook. I don't know if you remember this, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but right after your dad died, you announced that your dad had died, and you said, he and I had a complicated relationship, or words to that effect, and it was just so honest, you know?
Well, we did have a complicated relationship, and it started when I was really young. He was a workaholic. He wasn't home at all growing up.
A lot of dads were like that
back then. And then when he was in high school and college, he... was, and he was a he got in, he started stealing money from people, and he did it through real estate by saying, you know, give me a lot of, give me hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I'll buy this big building. And he ends up going to jail for 33 months.
Oh my god!
So that is, you know, that certainly affected our relationship.
Ever an apology to the people he swindled or to the family?
He did make some restitution for some of the money.
Yeah.
But, you know, when stuff like that happens, there is so much shame that goes on, and nobody wants to talk about it. And when he came back from prison, nobody wanted to say, you know, the word prison.
Yeah.
We'd refer to, you know,
Dad was away.
Dad was away, exactly. Or if you were really brave, you'd say Terre Haute, because that's the prison he went to.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, pretended like it didn't exist. Of course, then I go and do a show about it and talk about it on the radio.
Yes.
And it's funny because in the show, you know, my family, my brothers and sisters, they don't get me. You know, like, why are you talking about Dad? You're so mean. Get over your anger. Mm. And so they didn't want me to speak at the funeral. And I created a scene at the church, and I'm not going to go into it. That's in the show. But let's just say the Winnetka police were involved.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me. How old were you when he served his prison time?
I was old. I was probably 27 or 28.
It's probably easier to deal with at that age than you're like 10 years old or something. What do you tell people? What did you tell people?
You know, it's funny, Wendy, because all my friends... only one person of all my friends ever called me up and said, we heard your dad's going to jail. Is there anything we can do about it? Because nobody wants to talk about it. Now, I grew up in Kenilworth, which was a very small, wealthy community. And, you know, everybody knows everybody. And this was the 90s before anybody was going to jail. Now, thank God it's changed out there. But so nobody wanted to talk about it. And that's... that doesn't help anybody.
It's an awkward thing to bring up, though,
right.
You know, like, so, what color's your dad's jumpsuit? Yeah, I mean, what do you say?
I think it was green. It wasn't orange. A lot of people, Wendy, make that mistake, but no, it was green, and it was a two-piece thing.
Oh, it was.
Really?
Yeah,
right.
It was green pants with a green work shirt.
Your mom was alive while your dad was incarcerated, right?
Correct, yeah.
What was her reaction to this?
Well, she was one of those people who was very strong, and she would go down and visit him.
Yeah.
And, you know, she didn't have an easy time because he had forged the title to the house.
Oh.
So she had to declare bankruptcy, and she had to save the house. So she didn't have an easy time either.
But look what you've done. You've taken what is a horrible, horrible situation and made it funny. And that's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No, it's not. And it takes a while to do that. Like, I couldn't talk about this. You know, the funeral was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Roughly. I couldn't talk about it when it happened, you know, because I was filled with shame and I was filled with fear and all sorts of anger and feelings and stuff like that. And the same thing with having Betsy. Like, you know, I was in shock for like 6 or 7 months, and I didn't fall in love with my child and my daughter until probably 6 or 7 months. And everyone was telling me, oh, you know, when you have her, it's immediately she's going to come out. You're going to fall in love with her, and it's going to be unconditional love. Well, she's the one who taught me unconditional love, because I didn't have any.
It's so interesting to hear anybody say it took me 6 months to fall in love with my child, because nearly everybody else tells the exact opposite, that the second they saw, not even saw them, but knew they were existing, you fall in love with them. That's very strange to me.
That's an interesting way of phrasing it, though, because when I had my first son and my second son, you look at them and you think, my God, there is not anything I wouldn't do to keep you safe. I will give my life. But I don't know about falling in love that second. It's a different thing.
Yeah, and I think...
Did you say to her, Jimmy, you've got 3 more weeks. You better do something to make me fall in love with you.
No,
there's going to be problems.
Lauren said, go take her off Craigslist. We're not getting any responses. No,
You weren't resentful or hateful. It's just you weren't... Or were you?
No, I think I was. I think I was angry because... And I start the show this way. My therapist told me... Now, I'm 52 or 50 when he tells me. He says... Mm-hmm. And I'm a very unhappy person. You know, as we mentioned, Bill and I auditioned for you know, did voiceovers. But I was in improv, and I had seen all my friends go on to be famous. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to name drop, but like Chris Farley and Tim Meadows and Rachel Dratch.
Name some names.
Okay, I'll name some more. Right, Dave Koechner was my roommate. Stephen Colbert and I did corporate video.
Wow.
And Wendy and Bill, I was so angry that fame hadn't come to me.
Yeah.
And so I was in group therapy, and my therapist said to me after like 10 years, he's like, you know what? If you want more joy in your life, you and your wife should have a baby. And I'm like, what? You got to be kidding me. So I went home to Lauren and said, you know, you got to get pregnant. We got to have a baby.
Therapist says so. Yes,
they say, yeah, I do everything the therapist says. And so I have Betsy, and the joy isn't there yet. Immediately. So I feel either I'm doing something wrong or I've been ripped off.
You need to surround yourself with less talented people. That's what you need to do.
Bill,
you need to
if I could go back to my 20-year-old self, yes, I would have said, hang out with the people that are going to quit, you know? Right. We're going to sell office supplies.
Yes, yeah, that's the way to play it.
Yeah.
A lot of times having your first kid, you don't know what to do, as we've mentioned, so you grow with them, and I just feel bad you didn't fall in love with your kid, but you love your kid, and Betsy and you are great now.
Oh, now it's amazing, Wendy. It's amazing, you know, how much I love my daughter. I mean, just amazing, you know? And, you know, part of it was, I don't know how to have fun. I don't know how to take in joy. And Lauren...
I kind of understand that to a small degree.
I'm sure a lot of people out there listening. And I remember it was like 6 months into it, and I was playing roll the ball. Did you play roll the ball with your kid? You're sitting on the floor and you just roll
the
ball. Or it's pass the ball, you know, depending on what neighborhood you grew up.
Yeah.
And my wife Lauren comes in and she's like, Betsy brings you a lot of joy. You just can't realize it. And I'm like, and I get in a fight with her, of course. I'm, no, I'm not having fun. And, you know, she was absolutely right. And she said to me, I know your shtick. I've been married to you. You are happiest when you're miserable. And, you know, that pretty much sums up me.
Wow.
You wouldn't let the joy in, is what it was.
Exactly.
The joy was there.
If the joy was there, I couldn't. I was
recognize it or acknowledge
it. No. I needed somebody, like a seeing eye dog, to point it out to me and go, okay, this is what joy looks like. This is what joy feels like.
Yeah.
Go for more of it, maybe?
Jimmy Crane's one-man show is called World's Greatest Dad. World's Greatest Dad? Question mark. Go to...
Are you talking about you or your dad?
Jimmy Crane.
I think World's Greatest Dad.
That's the way to say
Savor
it.
Savor that. That's Savor the
Jeremy
question
Piven's
mark.
Dad, wasn't it? Yes.
Vern Piven. Yeah, absolutely. you want to go to secondcity.com for ticket information or call them at 312-337-3992. Why wouldn't you? We'll be back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Jimmy Crane is here. He has a new show, World's Greatest Dad. It shows every Saturday beginning June the 15th. It runs through July 20th. It's at Judy's Beat Lounge on North Avenue. SecondCity.com has your ticket information. Standard ticket price, $20. $15 if you're a college student with a valid ID. $10 if you're a SC Training Center student. $5 if you breed show horses.
Yes.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
You don't see that every day.
Well, it's a market that people really, you know, I want it to really reach.
Yeah, you're doing it. You're absolutely doing it. Do you think a guy can be the same guy? All right, so the show deals with your relationship with your own dad and then your new relationship being a dad. Is that the same guy or are those two very different guys?
I think my dad's always in my head, you know, and so I see sometimes, you know, I'll react to something with Betsy. I'm like, oh, that's how my dad would react. So hopefully there's that two second pause or whatever. But I think, my dad was someone who couldn't stand up for himself, and, he couldn't stand up for me as well. And I hope, you know, and, you know, Wendy mentioned something about, you know, being protective as a parent. I hope I've learned from his mistakes and can be more protective of my daughter and be more involved in her life.
That's what it is. You need to not only be there to protect them, but you need to be there emotionally now. I have two teenagers. It's like it's harder now with them than when they were toddlers because they require a different thing. Before, just feed them, change their diapers. But now you're hoping to shape them into great young men.
Right. And that's what I didn't have. You know, my dad, because he worked, he'd come home. He'd disappear in the back room. We'd see him for 10 minutes. He was like a party clown. He was gone. And so... You're right. You have to be there. You know, you have to stay off your phone. You know, Betsy cries or Betsy will say, I'm angry or I'm sad. And I think when I was growing up, it was like, okay, you know, how do we shut down the sadness? How do we shut down the anger? And it's like, now you have to validate.
Yep.
Oh, I hear you're angry, you know.
But overall, wouldn't you say, because I have friends who have kids and I have friends who do not have kids, and they both have merit. You know, there's certain things. My brother-in-law and his wife have no children, and they have tons of money because they haven't spent money on anything like colleges and things like that.
And they travel a lot,
They travel all the time. Yeah. They have a boat.
What?
They get sleep, you know.
All right, so the question is, overall, don't you find that there's these little hidden moments and seconds every day, hopefully, that you just go, this is so worth it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've never felt more fulfilled. And again, you know, Lauren, my wife, she's like, she didn't tell me this until after about 6 years that we had been married and we had Betsy. She's like, before you were such a depressive. You know, I'm like, oh, it's good to know now. And then she's like, you're so much lighter, you're so much more fun now. And you feel like, she said, you know, it seems like you feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
And if you would have told me that before I had Betsy, I would have said, you know, she's just getting in the way of my career and blah, blah, blah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty screwed up, Bill. I know we've known each other for a long time, but...
You'd see a flash every now and then.
But no one talked about it. Like, you know, if this was back then and you were running into Bill, you wouldn't be bringing this up.
No.
Now's the time to, you know...
Right.
I probably, if I saw Bill, because I know he had two kids at the time, I'd be like, he's giving up his dream, you know? Poor Bill, keep auditioning for those voiceovers. Maybe one will hit.
Do your other siblings feel the same way about the relationship with your dad that you feel?
No, not at all.
They don't.
And that's why they prevented me. They were really afraid that at the funeral that I was going to get up and talk about my dad's criminal past. And so there was a sense they wanted to protect my dad.
And that's not the right place, in my own humble opinion.
I agree. And
you do it outside the church.
Right. And I had no
set up a booth.
I had no intent. I had no intention of doing that.
Right.
But. You know, my role in the family was, oh, this guy's the big mouth. He's done a show about it. He's written a blog about it. He posted something on Facebook about it.
Yeah.
So they were scared, you know?
But they have to understand that doing what you do, you can only draw on your own life's experience. If you're writing fiction, you could go other ways, but that's not what you're doing.
Right. I totally agree with you. And it's funny because my dad, before he died, I met with him a couple times. And one of the things, I as he was dying, I said, is there anything I can do to prepare, you know, for your dying? And he said, yes, I'd really like you to speak at my funeral and make everybody laugh. Now, that's not what exactly happened. You'll have to come to the show to find out. But, you know... I spoke at the funeral for my daughter because I didn't want to make the same mistake my dad had made by not standing up for myself, you know, and because he couldn't stand up for me and he couldn't stand up for
I gotta
for
see
other
this
people.
It sounds so good.
World's
Jimmy.
Greatest dad?
World's greatest dad? ? Perfect. Every Saturday, June 15th through July the 20th at Judy's Beat Lounge on North Avenue. A couple ways to get tickets. SecondCity.com, 312-337-3992. Or just ask Jimmy if you see him walking around. Say,
I have postcards, so I'll give you a postcard.
Yeah, that'll be great.
And a website?
Yes, I have a website, jimmycarain.com. You can go and check it out there.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Guy. You, Wendy, I've known Bill.
Bill.
Not so much.
No, thank you, Jimmy. I'm still mad that Bill got that Geico spot back
in
98.
Come on, it was a long time ago.
You're the gecko?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm the stunt gecko. I do the stuff the gecko's afraid to do. Jimmy, great to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you. And great to meet you, Wendy.
Thank you.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
Steve, we appreciate it. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we have rolled in the portable couch for our friend and show therapist, Dr. John Duffy. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Very good. John, a couple quick questions. Question number one. We just had Jimmy Carain in. He's an actor. He's a comedian. He's got a one-man show. And his story, I'm sure you heard part of it as you were waiting in the PPG paint screen room, is that...
Good job.
Thank you. So Jimmy was explaining that he was having a run where things were not quite going his way, and he was finding himself very, very unhappy.
Right.
And his therapist said, you need to have a baby. That'll turn things around. You'll have a baby, and boy, everything will just be roses all of a sudden. I'm curious, is that a normal thing for a therapist to recommend, is for a patient to have a baby?
I don't know Jimmy's therapist, yeah. And with all due respect, I'm sure that there is something singular about Jimmy's situation that would suggest that.
Oh.
On the whole, no, that is not what we would typically say.
Yeah.
Typically, we'd say, get your house in order and then have a baby, because we cannot count on an infant to solve your issues.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Or a 4-year-old or a 10-year-old. That this is a big burden for a child to take on if you are struggling.
Interesting.
I think it could make things worse.
I was thinking the same thing.
Definitely.
Because it would be another, for somebody who is struggling, another complication, right?
Well, we're all parents. It's a really stressful time to have a baby, right? You know, this is something we are completely unfamiliar with. We don't know how to take care of this little person.
Right.
We don't always agree with our spouse or a significant other about what to do. It's probably not the best time to think like this is going to help me.
Right.
It's more like my goal is to be intact and help this person for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My other question is, and I asked you, I don't know if you'll remember, but I asked you this about a year ago, a year and a half ago in a similar case. There was another instance of a school teacher, a 28-year-old school teacher. This took place in Arizona. She had a sexual relationship with one of her students, a 13-year-old student. Sent him some crazy texts about how much she loves him. Sent him some lewd pictures of herself. All right. So I will ask you the same question I asked you off the air a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
The profile in these women is almost always identical. And they're always very attractive women, which makes it even stranger. Because usually when the tables are reversed, it's very scary-looking, creepy guys. But the women tend to be very young, vivacious, attractive women who are willing to put their own families on the line for a student, for a young kid.
Yeah.
Why is that the pattern?
Right. So there's no doubt in my mind that there are unmet emotional needs in these women that arrests their development. Otherwise, they wouldn't be drawn to somebody who is, in some of these cases, 12, 13, 14 years old, right? So that there's something aberrant in that alone. And typically, I don't want to overgeneralize here, but that has something to do with her relationship with her father or her stepfather or both. And that's in the few cases I've worked with. I've worked with a couple situations that were similar to this, didn't go as far as a Mary Kay Letourneau or this recent case.
Yeah.
But could have for sure if we didn't resolve some of these issues from childhood that arrested their development. Oftentimes it involves sexual abuse. And so if your initial sexual experience happens when you're that age, you tend to kind of arrest at that age and be drawn to somebody around that age.
You just freeze at whatever age that took place.
Yes.
At.
So when you hear arrested development, it's not just a really funny show. Yeah, that actually funny. Is really something that happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the same thing, although conversely for some for women who prefer men that are like their father's age or older?
For sure. For sure. In a far more adaptive way, right? You know, this can be something that works for both parties, whereas if it's really maladaptive and you're drawn to somebody who is inappropriately young, inevitably gets you in some kind of trouble.
But take me through the thought process, John, because these women, they know that their, first of all, their careers are on the line. Second of all, they know that they could end up in jail. So what would a woman who seems to be a fairly intelligent woman, they've reached their teaching and there's got to be some smarts up there.
Yeah.
Why do they put that all aside? Do they know that what they're doing is wrong or not?
I think on paper, they could. So there's two sides of the brain, right? So one side of the brain is going to tell you, I know this is wrong. I know this is wildly inappropriate. There's no way I should make a single move in that direction. But there's this primitive emotional side of the brain that doesn't really follow that program.
Yeah.
And so at some point, it's not a lot. It's very few of these women and some men, more men probably, if we're being honest, reach this tipping point where I know I have this great life and I've created, even with all the trauma I went through when I was young, I've created something beautiful out of this. I'm married, I have children, I'm a teacher. And yet this kid somehow taps something in my psyche that I that is a tipping point for me, and I cannot now stop myself from acting on it.
Wow. Wow.
All right, so raising kids nowadays, I was surprised with some of the sex questions I got when my kids, mainly Dylan, were younger.
Right.
And I answered, and I didn't make it seem like a big deal.
Right.
And now I feel like when we're parenting children, we almost have to tell them about certain predators out there, like a teacher who may be showing you some extra interest. I mean, things have changed now, and we have to start talking to our kids earlier and earlier, don't we?
Parenting has changed radically in just the last few years. I think about, I wrote my first book about 9 years ago, and
The Available Parent.
The Available Parent. And a lot of it was about, like, hey, if you're present and available and there for your kid and your ego is in check, you're in a good space. Now there is so much a parent has to know that we didn't have to know just a few years ago. So we all have older kids, but if we were raising 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds right now, we would have to be armed with all sorts of information. We would have to know, like, oh, you have to be careful about boundaries with adults that you are trained to trust, right? Things
yes.
like that, you know? And we need to talk about sex at a much earlier age. I was getting a haircut the other day, and the stylist, who has a 6-year-old in kindergarten, came home and said, "Mommy, we had the bad kid drill today," which is the school shooter drill.
Wow.
And so she had to talk her child through, like, yes, your locker is close to the door, so the shooter might see you first. And so, you know, they have to talk through what you would do in that case. Meanwhile, mom's trying to contain her own emotions while trying to contain her daughter's as well.
Right.
So there's a whole host of things that parents have to know and be really informed about that we really didn't have to know a whole lot about.
We'll talk about that more in just a little bit. Dr. John Duffy is here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and a 20 on WGN.
Clinical psychologist, life coach, parenting expert, friend of the show, Dr. John Duffy is with us right now. We spoke real quickly about your first best-selling book, The Available Parent. You have a new book coming out. Can you give us the name of it yet? Every
yes.
time we ask.
The title of the book is Parenting the New Teen. The subtitle, we want to allude to the idea that the teenagers have stretched on the short end and on the long end, and that there is so much more that we as parents need to know to successfully guide our kids through these years. And the adolescent years are long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned prior to the break about the bad kid drill that this little kindergartner got, and the
yeah.
mom was talking to you about it. It does sound scary, but don't you think arming our kids with information makes them less scared?
I think it's the best bad idea we can come up with. You know, I really do, because we do have to let our kids know this is happening, right? This pops up on notifications. They talk about it amongst themselves. I know kids this young are keenly aware that school shootings are happening. And I work with kids who have these school phobias. And in large part, it's because I don't know that I'm going to make it out today. I'm working with parents who have that anxiety. When they drop their kids off at school, I'm going to have one last look because I'm not sure that this day is going to end the way I want it to, you know, and every day. And I don't remember a single day like
no.
that. And
yeah.
I can tell you guys, right, are in the same boat. So, yeah, I think it's empowering to give kids something to do. I don't love the name, you know, bad
yeah.
kid drill. That kind of puts kids in a position of being vigilant for the bad kid and
yeah.
labeling some kid bad, as opposed to sometimes people do really, really aberrant, odd things. We are going to have a plan for the rare occasion, rare
yeah.
possibility that might happen here.
Emergency drill. Couldn't
Emergency,
it just be called
right?
that?
Oh, yeah.
yeah. Like, you know, a tornado's
right.
probably not going to happen, but just in case, let's have a plan.
Right.
Yeah.
John, I've told the story that in my grade school, they started kind of easing into teaching kind of sex ed, and there were a handful of parents who said, oh, no, my kids aren't ready at fifth grade or sixth grade
yes.
or seventh grade to hear this. I imagine that must go on at a school that decides to do these sort of drills, right? There's going to be some parents who go, you're scaring my kid even more by putting him through the drill.
Absolutely. There are, I don't think we can name the district in the area that doesn't have school board meetings debating whether this is okay. The drills and the sex ed classes,
right,
and when to have those. So now there's some discussion about moving those down a couple of grades. And I tend to support that as long as it's not heavy-handed and you know, and real graphic, but to start that discussion early is probably really healthy for kids.
Kids are talking nowadays, and you're right, we almost have to start educating them and talking to them younger and younger. It's Pride Month, it's June. I know that there are a lot of kids out there that either haven't come out to their parents, but maybe they have to their friends. What can we talk about with that?
So that happens more often than not. Kids feel way more comfortable coming out to their friends than their parents. So kids have told me a couple of things lately. One is you get this designation LGBTQ. So I'm working with this. She goes by she, and she's transgender. And she said, somehow we've all gotten clustered together. I don't have much in common with a gay guy, you know? And so I'm not sure that the cluster works very well. But also, people come to me and expect, because I'm transgender and I'm out, that I know everything about this. And she likened it to if somebody in my class loses a parent and we go to the wake, we expect that kid to know what grieving is about and how they're supposed to do that, when in fact this just happened to them. And her point was, for almost any child going through any of this coming out stuff, this is a process and we're not experts at it yet. We're still working it through ourselves. So let's have a discussion. Ask me questions. I might know the answer. I might not know yet.
Right.
And so be patient with me. I'm trying to figure this out just like you are.
I would imagine kids that fall under this category, whether it be LGBTQ or none of the above,
right,
have more battles with anxiety or depression. Suicide is probably up.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. They're absolute. I mean, you know, every single study suggests the same thing. And so the clarion call, I think, to friends, to parents, and to the kids who are coming out themselves is, we really have to take care of these kids. We cannot be in the dark about it. We can't say, this doesn't please me as a parent, I wish you were cisgender and would just go along with the program, because these kids are at enormous risk, way multiple times more than their straight counterparts. So we have to go out of our way, not just to accept them. And this is something I've learned from some kids, because the word acceptance suggests something along the lines of, yeah, okay, you know, it's, we'll deal with it, instead of like, we embrace it and we know you are who you always have been. This is just some new information we're finding out about you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's important.
When one of my kids was going to daycare, there was two guys that adopted two kids, and it was very normal for my kids to see that families come in different shapes and sizes.
Yes.
So hearing you say it's easier for kids to come out to their peers and their friends, it's because I feel that generation right now is more accepting, and it's the parents that are still kind of old school, if you will.
Absolutely. The cue we can take is from our teenagers and sometimes our tweenage kids, like our kids in middle school. Kids are really, really accepting and matter of fact about this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, there is no label. There's very, very little, if any, bullying that I've come across around these issues in the last decade or so. And if we parents can kind of pay attention to the way kids treat each other, it's really no different than they would treat any other kid. So to your point, Wendy, that is where our learning curve can take a speed.
So there's progress, but there's still a long way to go.
Especially for our generation.
Yeah.
And in fairness to our generation, I think we have to work through our emotions about, like, this isn't going to go the way I anticipated.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be different.
We have time for one quick phone call. Scott, this is Dr. John Duffy, and we don't have a lot of time, so go ahead.
All right, I'll be brief. I listen to you all the time. My question is, we are, you know, let's say a child, like you said, I'm just coming out, this is new to me, how do I handle it? What about the child who says, I don't know how to handle this. I'm straight. I don't agree with your lifestyle, but I'm going to be accepting. I'm not going to be rude to you, whatever. But I still have my viewpoint that I don't agree with that lifestyle.
Right.
How do we treat those that side of the story as well?
Well, I think that there's a couple of challenges. I think for straight kids who do have some moral or religious issue with that lifestyle, part of it is to really consider, and I've worked with some kids, Scott, to your point, who feel that way. And some of them have decided, until I really clarify how I feel, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to hold off for now, and I'm just going to kind of observe these kids, how I feel about this, and trust that my point of view, like everybody else's, is developing over time. Not that necessarily they're going to change their minds or feel less so. They may feel more so as time goes on, but to allow that to kind of ferment and solidify for them, as opposed to kind of coming out anti and against out loud, because sometimes that doesn't work for those kids. And now, Scott, to be honest, some of those kids who are anti-LGBTQ kids, they're the ones who get marginalized in a little bit. You can really put yourself in a really bad position amongst that generation that is very open-minded to these things. So I think it's important to kind of guide our kids toward modulating their response and really thinking about it for a while.
Right, right. Can I say one thing real quick as well?
Sure, go quick though, Scott.
As far as the older generation, and I know this is going to sound silly, my parents got a new smartphone. They have a hard time understanding it. That doesn't mean that they're idiots. They're just not tech savvy. Same thing with this. The older generation, they don't understand this. So I don't think that the gay community or even straight community, we shouldn't start judging people because for 60 years of your life, you're told one thing. Now let's just call this, okay, boom, this is an explosion. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It means that, you know, all of a sudden they're supposed to change immediately. I don't think that's correct.
No, but they need to try to understand as opposed to just saying, I don't understand, so I don't like it. Aren't your parents trying to learn how to use their phone?
They are, but this is, I said that would be kind of a poor example. This is a moral issue. If the older community, let's say their religious beliefs or even just society's beliefs that they were brought up on, immediately changes. And you got to admit, in the last 10 years, it immediately changed. So now we're just going to flip this coin and say, you need to accept. You need to accept. I think we, straight community, gay community, whoever, shouldn't we be giving them the same respect that they want as well?
Scott, we thank you. We're out of time. We got 10 seconds to answer that, John. Thank you, Scott.
Perhaps it is a moral issue, Scott. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. It is also a mental health and wellness issue for some of these kids, so there's some urgency on that other end as well.
And thank you for calling, Scott. We appreciate all opinions here because that's what we do. Dr. John Duffy, where can people find you?
You can find me at drjohnduffy.com. Everything about me should be there.
New book comes out when?
Should come out in August or September early.
All right, we'll be talking about that.
For those of you not in the studio... Wendy's dancing like a crazy
robot.
Wow, that's frightening. You're not going to do that.
Almost Friday.
Right. That explains it.
I'm getting ready for the weekend.
That explains it. I think I was part of a scam last night.
What happened?
I attended the White Sox game, my first White Sox game of the year. I attended it.
Oh.
I went to it. I visited it. I watched it. My first White Sox game of the year, I was the guest of Roy Spencer's. From Permaseal.
Here's how the conversation went. Hey, Bill, I'm Roy Spencer.
Can I tell you, I brought up to him your impression of
he loves it.
Himself. He started to cry.
He did not. He's the nicest man.
I said, how about when Wendy does that Roy Spencer, and he holds his hand up like, don't, and then he pulled out a handkerchief and he started to cry.
Okay, here's why I don't believe
very
you.
Upset.
The last time we talked to Roy Spencer about Permaseal, which has changed my life, we used to get so much water in the basement.
Yeah.
Not a drop. But when we talked to him a few weeks ago, he did my impression of me doing him. So
he said he said last night, he goes, that's the only way I can cope with it.
Yeah, right. Anyway.
So we went to the game.
Scout seats?
Yes.
The only way to go.
Oh, you're spoiled for life. I believe me, I so appreciate little things like this. So if you sit in the scout seats, there it's the second row, and they keep coming and they ask you if you want anything to eat or drink, and then whatever you say, you could say anything, and then they just bring it to you. It's amazing. It's so much fun.
And you don't notice. I know we were talking about the mesh, the fencing that goes up.
You don't notice it.
You don't. And that's why you're not going to notice it if they go down the whole line.
The only downside is, because it was Roy Spencer with PermaSeal, is that he and I had to install a sump pump in the White Sox dugout in the fifth inning. That's the only thing I would have changed. And even that wasn't bad, because the players came by.
Did you wear gloves?
Yeah, I had gloves on. He said, bring a pair of gloves.
Good for
baseball
you.
Gloves. Which was
kind of hard to work.
So hard to maneuver. All right, so here's the scam part. Everything about the night was great. The White Sox won. I saw a grand slam. Wellington Castillo hit a home run. It was just a fun night. When the game is over, I had parked here at the station, and then I cabbed over.
Oh, boy.
So all I needed was to take a cab. Well, I didn't have any other way to get back. I mean, I guess I could have taken the train, but I'm...
Couldn't you have driven?
I could have, I guess, in retrospect. But I went to the cab stand, and, you know how a cab stand works. They're all in line, and you take the next available cab.
Where is the cab stand, though, at Guaranteed Rates?
By gate 4.
Oh, okay. So there's a designated cab area.
There are two. I was told, because it's the first time I ever cabbed at a White Sox park, that there are two cab stands.
Okay.
And I split one with Eloy Jimenez. Because he also was going in the city. Yeah. He's great at it. Oh, a natural.
I have never taken a cab from Guaranteed Rate or known anyone to take a cab.
But you're right.
Uber.
Because it's separate. Yeah, I know. But I'm not hooked up to the Uber. I'm hooked up to the cab. You just hold out your two fingers and they come by.
I can set you up with Uber in a second.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry.
I'm in the line, and the line for the cabs there works like every cab line you've ever seen. There's a line of cabs on the curb, and then you wait in line, and then you get the next available one. It's like it is at O'Hare, at Midway,
although there
wherever.
Are some people that get in a cab towards the end of the line.
I know. I saw a little bit of
was
that
it
last
Jimmy
night.
Jimmy Mack? Because he's notorious.
Does he
for
do that?
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that, and those of us who were in line are explaining to the people who were cutting
hold your
line.
Breath.
Yeah, they don't care. Yeah, that happened last night, too. So... here's where the scam part comes in. Tell me if this is a scam or not, because I think it is. When I get in line, there's four or five people in front of me or groups in front of me, so they get the next cab. So then it's my turn, and I go up to the cab, and the cab guy says this: I can take you to where you want to go, which is here. It's a $20 cab ride. He goes, but it's $35. I go, because why? He goes, because I just got a call. He goes, so I have to wait for the person who called me, or I can take you, but it's $35.
I would have said, go ahead, give me I would have gotten in the next cab.
I said, I'll take a pass, thank you. I go to the next cab. He goes, where are you headed as I'm getting in? I tell him this building. He goes, okay, but it's going to be double. I go, based on what? He goes, I just got a call. I go, oh, that's weird, because the cab in front of me also just got a call. He goes, busy night, the game just ended. I go, so everybody leaving the game just called cabs at random? You guys happen to be in line?
You got scammed.
That's what I think.
That's why I'm going to set you up with the Uber app.
It makes me want to switch to Uber. Because I've always stuck up for the cab drivers, and I thought, these guys spent the money. For the medallion of beef. That you get when you're a cab driver, they give you a medallion. I go, these guys spent the money. They've lived their dream. They've always wanted to be a cab driver. Now they're a cab driver. I'm going to support these guys and not Uber people. But now I may switch because of that.
They're making it up.
There's no way two in a row, right?
So what did you do? Did you go to the third one? Because I would have kept going down the line.
I went to the other cab stand, which was more in front of the park, and there were more cabs there. And then I got one.
And no one said that same thing?
No. So this is the gate 4 cab scam.
I'm writing that down.
Don't fall for the gate 4 cab scam. And these were different cab companies. It's not like they were all...
in cahoots.
I don't know what country they're from, Wendy.
No. That's
it might have
terrible.
Been cahoots. I don't know.
In a time when it is so easy to Uber, you'd think they'd be bending over backwards to help you.
You know how when you're done with an episode and you go, you know what I should have said...
Yeah. Right,
so last night, my episode of here's what I should have said was, this is the reason Uber and Lyft are messing with you guys is because you're pulling off stuff like this.
That wouldn't have changed anything.
Yeah, they would have still done it.
That would have been wasted breath from you.
Right. But I did, like, as I was walking away from that, I was watching to see if the next guy fell for it. And in both cases, I saw a little back and forth. And then they both got in their cabs and went about their business. So other people did fall for it.
Well, if there's a cab driver listening, I would like to know, like, if I was going home from the park, that's a longer ride, so it would be more money. Is that better or worse? The fact that you were just coming downtown.
I'm positive that if your route after a game is to pick up a fare at the game and then go wherever they go, you're probably going to end up having one or maybe two, right? You're not going to just keep going back and getting more fares.
So you'd probably want a longer ride.
The longer, the better, right? Yeah. But it did feel to me...
That seems wrong.
It felt very scammy.
Scammy, Davis.
How I love you. How I love you. How I love you. All right. What are your thoughts? Are you a cab driver? Is this legit? Should I have given in to this? I don't think so. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Let me quickly catch you up. I was at the White Sox game last night, and then after the game, I had not one but two cabs in a row who said they would gladly take me where I needed to go, but for twice the price because they conveniently just got a call.
Which, by the way, they
were willing to give up on if they could take me for twice the price.
All right. Well, Rosemary wants to jump in on this. I suggested maybe going Uber. What do you have to say, Rosemary?
Well, I would stay away from Uber also. I have the experience of leaving Ogilvy Station, looking for a cab with my daughter. We got to the cab line, headed towards the front of the line. This man approached my daughter and said, I can give you the ride. And my daughter says, fine. We get into his cab, which was all black, no markings on it. Mm-hmm. He takes us to State Street, and he said, $23. And I said, what? I said, I've taken this...
From Ogilvy to State Street,
it's 23? Ogilvy to State Street on a Sunday morning at 11:30. And he says, it's $23. And I said, why? He says, because it's Sunday. And I said, no. There's no such a thing as being more expensive on Sunday.
Yeah.
He says, it's $23. And I said to him, you aren't a cab driver, are you? I said, are you Uber? And he said, yes.
Yeah, but see, now I don't understand because you prepay in the Uber app, so you know how much it's going to be before you agree to it.
We didn't use the Uber app. He approached us as we were heading to the cab line. And he asked if we wanted a ride, and my daughter said yes. He says, I can take you. So
I bet he wasn't even Uber.
I don't know what he was, and I said to him,
you're lucky you got out alive.
Yeah, and of course, I'm arguing with him, and my daughter says, Mom, it's a fare, just pay it. She gives him $25, and we get out of the cab. I was so upset even the rest of the day. $25 from Ogilvy to Macy's on State Street.
That's unbelievable.
That should have been a $7 ride.
All right. Well, Rosemary, thank you so much. That's why I really would like to teach you how to use the Uber app.
All right. But here's my other... now, this is a gripe I have with Uber and Lyft. And is there a third service? Isn't there a third one? I see a sticker for another one that isn't Uber or Lyft. Anyway, you know how if they're waiting for a fare and there's an opening on the street where they're waiting in front of a hotel or a restaurant, whatever, you got an opening, wouldn't you pull into the opening so you're not blocking a lane of traffic? It seems like everybody at Uber and Lyft does the exact opposite and says, I'll just wait here. I know it inconveniences everybody in this lane, but then it'll be easy for me once they get in the car to just continue my route. But for everybody behind them, it's insane.
I got to be honest with you, I haven't noticed that.
Oh, it's every day.
I see cabs do it, too.
Cabs do it, but not as much as Uber and Lyft.
Cabs do it. Uber does it. I don't know about Lyft. Do they do it?
I even one time, I pulled up next to a guy, and I rolled down the window, and I signaled for him to do the same. And I said, I'm just curious. You see the open spots there, right? And he goes, I do. I go, why don't you pull into one of them? He goes, once they get in the car, though, I can just speed right off. I go, I know, but for the 5 minutes that you're waiting there, everybody behind you has to switch lanes. He goes, that's not my problem.
It isn't.
I guess it's not.
And it's very cute that you're trying to solve the world's problems by... He doesn't care what you
have to say. All I was doing was, I was thinking in my head, maybe it never occurred to him. Maybe he never really... But it obviously did occur to him. He just doesn't want to play by anyone else's rules.
But cabs do it too, and you take a cab.
I don't know why I'm more forgiving of it of a cab driver, but for an Uber guy or a Lyft guy, you go, you're one of us, right? You're a driver just like the rest of us. Would you like a guy blocking your lane just because it's easier for you in 5 minutes? That's insane.
Well, they're picking someone up. You're not, although you should just do like
I'm going to start moving people around town.
You should do that.
I will start doing that. I'll dress like Lionel Stander from Heart to Heart.
Where to, Mrs. H?
You'll just call everyone Mrs. H,
no matter who they are.
All right. Coming up, the stories that matter. Are we early, I guess?
Oh,
are we? I guess we a little early. I'll just say it now. Coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung. He is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But I'm worried about our last caller. That's why you...
Shouldn't she have gone to whoever the boss was? We determined that was an Uber driver, right?
He said he was Uber. There's no way to prove that. Go through the app. Yeah. Here's why. Do it for your safety. That story that was in the news where this poor girl got into the wrong car.
I know.
If you use the Uber app, you get their plate number, you get their name.
And the price is already fixed.
Yeah.
They can't say we went from Ogilvy to State Street and it's $23.
No,
it's a fixed price.
What you're signing up for. When you punch something in, you can see what cars are in your area. You can click on it and see how much the rate's going to be.
Right.
You can see the driver and see if they have like good reviews.
And the rates are, it's a fixed rate, right? Like somebody can't undercut that. Like if somebody types in and goes, I'll take you from there to there for $15, somebody can't go, I'll do it for $13. That doesn't exist, right?
I bet it could.
Oh, does it really?
I don't think that. I used Uber and Lyft quite a bit. Well, I use Lyft. I don't really use Uber. But once you lock it in,
that
driver comes to pick you up. And if you cancel, the Lyft will charge you $5. Depending.
Right,
I mean,
but Bill's saying like you can see if there are four cars around you, you can click on all of them to check them. Is the price always the same amongst those three drivers near your area?
That's not how Lyft works. I mean, it'll give the price and then you click it
and then somebody responds.
One of those cars that are driving around will pick your fare up.
All right.
But, I mean, that's the best way to do it. You know their plate number. You know their name. You have their contact information.
Right.
So
they can track you, too. They can track your drive where you're at.
Yes.
Who can track
Lyft or Uber.
But, I mean, I think there's a way to share your...
You can share
your route.
Yeah,
so,
you can
like,
share
if I wanted to share it with Jim could check, like, oh, Wendy took an Uber to a gentleman's club to apply for a job. He'd like, I wanted to drive her, but she wouldn't let me. God, my brain does not work sometimes. But he could track to make sure I was indeed going to a gentleman's club and that I arrived safely. It's really, I wouldn't do Uber or Lyft without the app.
Yeah. Can I only get a driver who assures me that he or she will not block a lane of traffic when waiting for other fares? Because that's the only way I'll give in to that.
But again, cabs do it and you take
cabs. No, I'm not happy when cabs do it, but because I've seen it happen my whole life, I go, well, it's a cab driver. Of course, they're going to block a lane of traffic. But when I see a Dodge Challenger do it, I just go, hey, what's wrong with you? There's an open space right there. Pull in. Wait there. Not my problem. I know.
It isn't.
I know it's not, but what happened to the common courtesy that used to exist where people just go,
there is none.
It's better for everybody if I pull into the space and let traffic go past me.
Bill, I am finding people dropping people off at various locations that aren't Uber or Lyft,
right,
and they just like stop in the middle of the street.
I know.
So, I mean, there is no common courtesy anymore.
It's gone. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more stuff. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.